December 10th, 1989, Rabbi A.H. Lappin at the home of the Shofs.
Cheers. It is really based on a talk I heard a rabbi giving. It was a good rabbi. Unfortunately, the talk was not a good talk. And when he had finished, his thesis was that Jews assimilate. Lithuanian Jews are like the Lithuanians, Russian Jews like the Russians, German Jews like the Germans, English Jews like the English. For the time being, we'll leave out the American Jews. Now, that was his thesis, and he based it on where Hashem says to Avraham Avinu, Lech lecho me'artzecho b'moladetecho u'mibeis avicho. Leave your country, leave your birthplace, the city where you were born, and leave your father's house and go to a land which I shall show you. And his thesis was that the reason Avraham had to leave was that he shouldn't be influenced by the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, in whose midst he was living. That wasn't a very interesting part. The interesting part was that after his lecture, two young men in the audience came up to my son and me in Johannesburg and said to us, "You didn't agree with what was said, did you?" So I said, "How did you know?" And these two young men said, "We were just watching the expressions on your faces." And I'm sure my son did the same as I did, and that was to hide any thoughts that we might have had on the subject. And these two young men wanted to know what was our ideas on it. And I said, "Well, I'm speaking on that very subject tonight." And I spoke on that subject that night. He spoke at a kiddush on Shabbos morning, and I gave a shiur that Saturday night on the subject. Not quite the same as I'm giving tonight, but the subject was really assimilation, acclimatization, and authenticity. That is my subject tonight. Now, after the lecture, he asked me whether I didn't agree with it. And I said to him, "I don't agree with it." I said, "I am in a privileged position, and you heard me say that before. I lived in Lithuania. I studied there. And I saw our great ones in Lithuania. There was nothing there of the Lithuanian. And in the previous generations, are you going to tell me that if Simcha Zisrael had a lot of the Lithuanian going in him, that Rabbi Yitzchok Elchanan Spector had a lot of the Lithuanian going in him? It's just impossible. It wasn't so." And so the subject that I wish to deal with falls really into two parts. The one is assimilation. Is there assimilation or isn't there assimilation? The answer to that is, of course, there's assimilation. There is a tremendous amount of assimilation taking place in the United States. There is a lot of assimilation taking place in England. There's assimilation taking place in Europe. Wherever Jews are, there is today a tremendous amount of assimilation. There is no question about that. We are living in a very fortunate period and a very exciting period. It is the period of the Baal Tshuva movement. And great things are happening. Now, I'm not speaking about a Baal Tshuva who is a dropout, he can't find anything. So he comes, he hangs onto a straw, and he comes and he wants to do Tshuva and he wants to learn Torah. I'm not speaking about a person like that. I'm speaking about a man that has, or woman, that has a tremendous amount of depth, and is searching, but with great seriousness, and has a good mind, and wants to find out where is the truth. I'm speaking about that type of person. And so, the Chofetz Chaim on the Gemara, that the world when Mashiach comes will be either Kulo Chayim or Kulo Zakayim, which is, has been, was always taken to mean that everybody will be worthy or nobody will be worthy. It will be either the one end or the other end. That is what will be the position of the Jewish people. His interpretation was a different one. He said it is concerning every individual Jew. You will have an individual Jew will either go away completely or he will come back completely. There won't be anything in the middle. That is the point that he made. And of course, a vast number of Jews are leaving the fold and are leaving us. That is at present in progress. And there is no doubt that we are going to lose probably millions of Jews in America as a result of the assimilation. Now, I'm not speaking about that type of person. I'm not speaking about a person that wants to assimilate. He wants to be like an American. He wants to be like an Englishman. He wants to be like a Frenchman. I'm not speaking about that type of person. I'm speaking about a person who wants to retain his identity. And by retaining his identity, I mean his Torah identity. That he believes in the Torah, and he wants to remain, he is a Torah Jew, and he wants to remain a Torah Jew. And the question is there any kind of assimilation that takes place with a Torah Jew? And as I told you, when one looks at our great ones, you can't tell me that there was anything of the Pole in the Chofetz Chaim. You can't tell me that there was anything of the Pole in the Aaron Kotler. Or when he came to America, he assimilated into the American scene. There was nothing like that at all. So we find that amongst Jews who are determined to retain their identity and to whom the Torah means everything, you will find that there isn't any assimilation. And yet, I must concede that there is something in it. The Russian Jew is different from the Lithuanian Jew. I must concede that the German Jew is different from the Polish Jew. I must concede that the German Jew is different from the English Jew, both Western Europe. But there is a difference. What I want to discuss with you is, what is this? Is this assimilation or isn't it assimilation? Now, Rebbe Eliezer Dessler, in his Michtav Me'Eliyahu, makes the point and says there are differences. He says, for example, the Russian Jew is warm-blooded. The Lithuanian Jew is cold-blooded. He says, as a result of that, Hasidismus could take root in Russia, it couldn't take root in Lithuania. The Lithuanian Jew couldn't take to it, but the Russian Jew could take to it. The Russian boy, when he has had a little bit to drink, wants more to drink. When he's had a lot to drink, he is really merry. He sings and he dances, and he eats and he continues drinking. And he's really merry. The Lithuanian boy, when he gets drunk, and I used to see them drunk every Sunday afternoon. On Sunday morning, they used to come in and go to church. After church, the public houses were open. They went in, they got drunk. A Lithuanian boy rolled in the gutter. He was harmless. He just rolled in the gutter until the evening. No dancing and singing, nothing like that at all. Of course they are different. Now, isn't, and the Russian Jew is different from the Lithuanian Jew. The Russian Jew is warm-blooded, and the Lithuanian Jew is cold-blooded. What I've got to discuss with you is this assimilation. Now we go further. We find that the German Jew is very much like the German. He's punctual, he's punctilious, everything has got to be exact. In England, the goy is civil. There's a tremendous amount of civility in England. Jews in England are also civil. If you stop an Englishman who is a goy in the street and you ask him where a certain place is, he would never say, "I've no time," ask somebody else. Never say that. He will listen to you, tell you exactly where to go. Go there, I'll take you till there. When you get to that spot, ask somebody else there. Don't go without asking. You can get confused there, and he will tell you exactly. Highly civil. The English Jew, also highly civil. Is that assimilation or isn't it assimilation? Now, the point I'm making, and this is my thesis, that isn't assimilation. Now, we are speaking about a particular type of Jew. That isn't assimilation. Then what is it that makes the German Jew like the German goy and the Russian Jew like the Russian goy? The same influences that make the Russian goy warm-blooded and the Lithuanian goy cold-blooded, those same influences make the Jew who lives in Russia warm-blooded and the Jew who lives in Lithuania cold-blooded. The same influences. What makes a Russian Jew warm-blooded and a Lithuanian Jew cold-blooded? What makes a German Jew so very exact and so very punctual? What makes the English Jew so very civil? So, the influences that make the goy what they are, those exactly the same influences make the Jew what they are. And this is something that we have to understand in greater detail. Now, I just want to, first of all, take this question that Avrohom wasn't influenced by the Babylonians and the Chaldeans. First of all, and the best proof is, in that society, in the Babylonian society and the Chaldean society, he came to the realization and to the firm conclusion that there was only one God. The Babylonians didn't believe in one God, and the Chaldeans didn't. He was the only one who believed in one God. So where's the influence? They didn't influence him. In fact, he was so definite in his belief in one God that when Nimrod the king told him he must subscribe to the belief of the people, and he refused, he was thrown into a fiery furnace. He was saved, but he was thrown into the fiery service. Where is the assimilation? Furthermore, if one takes a series of midrashim on the parsha of Lech Lecha, where Hashem tells Avraham Avinu that he must leave the land of his birth, not one midrash gives as a reason that he mustn't be influenced by it. Not one midrash gives that reason. So these people were far too great to be influenced against their beliefs which were so firm. They were not able to be influenced by their surroundings. So the reason that a German Jew is like a German to some extent, and the Russian Jew like the Russian to some extent, and the Lithuanian Jew like the Lithuanian goy to some extent, the reason is not one of assimilation, the reason is one of acclimatization. That same influence that makes the goy what he is, makes the Jew what he is. Now, that is not sufficient. We've got to discuss what influence is it that makes the goy what he is. why does the climate of Russia, whatever it might be, produce a boy that is warm-blooded, and Jews who live there become affected by that influence? A Lithuanian Jew cold-blooded, a German Jew so exact, so punctual, so punctilious, an English Jew so civil. What is this influence? Now, another proof I want to give you that these people weren't interested, they were not influenced. Yaakov Avinu lived with Laban for 20 years. Now, 20 years is a very long time to live with a person like Laban. This must have been a terrible period for him. Yeah, you've got a Rosho, and he's bound to him. He's living with him. He's working for him. For 14 years he worked for him, and in the next 6 years he also worked for him, but there was an arrangement that certain of the flock, those that were speckled and spotted, would belong to Yaakov. Can you imagine what it was? And yet, when Yaakov meets his brother Esau, he says, "Im Lovon Darki, Batav Yog Mitzvah Shomati." I lived with Lovon, but I kept the 613 commandments. There was no question about that. The person who could most easily have become assimilated was Yosef. Yosef is sold as a slave into Egypt. He works for Potiphar. And then afterwards he is chosen to be second to Pharaoh. Can you imagine the people with whom he has to mix? And how long that goes on before his own family comes. And he finds himself with his own family. And on that, the Torah says as follows, by he called Nefesh Yotze Yeret Yaakov Shivim Nefesh, and all the souls that were descended from Yaakov, who came with him to Egypt, were 70 souls. And then it adds one further phrase, for Yosef or Yorba Mitzrayim. And Yosef was already in Egypt. And Rashi quotes the Midrash and says, V'halo hu ubonov hoyo b'klal shivim, u'ma bo lelamdeinu v'chile hoyinu yodim, shehu hoyo b'mitzrayim. Isn't Yosef and his sons included in the seven souls? And don't we know that they are, that he's already in Egypt and that his sons is there? What does it tell us? Who Yosef, Elo Lehudiako Tzidko Social Yosef. It comes to tell us the righteousness of Yosef. Who Yosef Oroe, a son of his. This is the Yosef that tended his father's flock. Who Yosef, She Hoyo B'Mitzrayim, V'Nase Melech, V'Ome B'Tzidko. That is the same Yosef that was in Egypt, became a king, and remained firm in his beliefs. He remained firm in his righteousness. So there we've got the examples in the Torah, and there's no question that there was any kind of assimilation. And yet we have said that we do find that there is something of the Russian boy and the Russian Jew and so forth. What is it that takes place? Now I want to point out something else to you. We read in the Seder last week when Yaakov decided to leave Laban. The first thing it says, why did he decide to leave? By Ishmael, Divrei b'nei Laban deimor. He heard the words of the sons of Laban saying, Lokach Yaakov es kol asher lo avinu. Yaakov has taken everything that belongs to our father. That's what he has taken. U'me'asher lo avinu ose es kol hakavod hazeh. And from that which belongs to our father, he has gotten himself all this honor and all this glory. It goes on further, and when Yaakov decides to leave, and Laban finds out that he has left, and pursues him, Then Reuben comes and says to him, Lulei Elohei Ovi Elohei Avraham, Ufachad Yitzchoko Yoniki Ato Reikom Shelaftoni. First of all, Yaakov said to Reuben, I mean, what do you want of me? Hadn't it been for Hashem's help, you would have let me go after all these years without anything at all. So what are you saying? Vayan Reuben, and Reuben answered, Vayomer El Yaakov, and he said to Yaakov, Abonos Benosai, the daughters are my daughters, the Habonim Bonai, and the sons are my sons, the Atzon Soni, and the flocks are my flocks, the Chol Asher Atoro Elihu, and everything that you see here, that you are taking with you, it all belongs to me. That is what Reuben says to him. Is it true or is it a lie? He worked for it. And yet it is difficult to believe that if it was completely a lie, that it would be mentioned in the Torah at all. But more than that, it is so preposterous. How can he say a thing like that? Everything that you have got belongs to me. You've got nothing that belongs to you. How can he say a thing like that? And now we come on to something that is in our beliefs, and it is difficult to understand, but let us try and understand. Now, you know, there are powers in the world. There are physical powers in the world, and the physical powers in the world belong to the physical universe. There's electricity, there's magnetism. Those are forces, but we say that they belong to the physical world. Outside of the physical world, there is the spiritual world, the spiritual universe. And in the spiritual universe, there are also forces. Now, in the Torah, we come across it in the Torah. And in the Torah, these forces are called Malochim, angels, which is an unfortunate translation. All these forces are called Sarim. Sarim. It's a Sar. To give you one example in the Torah itself, which is coming up in the Torah next week, in our reading next week, when now Yaakov is on his way to... He's on his way to go to his parental home, and he knows that he's got to meet Esau on the way. As he is going, we find that he is crossing a brook or a river, and he takes everybody across, and he goes back to take some small thing to take with him. And the Torah says, Vayivoseh Yaakov levado. There Yaakov was left alone. And then, Vayeoved ish imo adalos ha-shachar. A man wrestled with him until daybreak. Vayarki lo yocholo. And when this man saw that he couldn't overpower Yosef, Vayiga v'chaf yerecho, he touched him in the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Yaakov's thigh sank as he was wrestling with him. And that caused a blemish in Yaakov, and he limped as a result of that. Now, who is this man that wrestles with him? What does this man want of Yaakov? Doesn't say anything. And Yaakov fights bitterly with him. And this man fights with Yaakov, and we don't know what it's all about. So the Torah Shebaal Peh tells us it was the Sar Shel Esau. Now, what is the Sar Shel Esau? The Torah tells us, this is the Torah Shebal Peh tells us, that after or at the time of the building of the Tower of Babel, when the people were spread over all the earth and they assumed different languages, when that happened, Hashem placed a power over each one of the nations. That is the son of that particular nation. Esau got his son, got that power. Now, as I say, it's translated as angels, it's translated as governors, asar. You know, in the spiritual universe, there is nothing material whatsoever. Everything is spiritual in the spiritual universe. So these powers and energies that they are in the spiritual world and come down to our world, or there is nothing material about them. This is a power that there is. And each nation has got its own son. Each nation has got its own malach. And that is the power of that particular nation. In order to be makarev el hadas a little bit, in order to endeavor to make this idea a little more palpable, it belongs to the whole question of Hishtalshelus. We believe that everything comes from a source. And as it comes down to our world, it goes through any number of worlds. And in each world, it is something different from what it is here in our world. To give you just an example, a physicist and I, we live in different worlds. When a physicist sees anything material, he immediately looks at the molecules and the atoms and the particles, and he goes very deeply into it. It's a different world altogether. It's a world of molecules and atoms. I don't operate in that world. I don't operate with those things. But it is never there. Before anything material assumes the appearance of what it is here, it goes through a chain. And there's a link in each chain. And as it goes through, it is something for that particular world until it comes down to us. And it comes down to us in this material form. There are examples I can give you. When we've got water, we can take water and we can very easily take this water and divide it into oxygen and hydrogen. Very easy to do by electrolysis. And then, so from something that is a liquid, we get now something that is a gas. And you can take this oxygen, this hydrogen, and now you can, you divide the molecules into atoms, and you can do all sorts of things with those atoms. So, but in our world, it's water. In a world of physics, it's oxygen and hydrogen. You can't drink it, you can't wash with it. But that is the reality of it. This water is really a gas. Two gases. And so I can give you examples just to try and bring the idea a little nearer to you. I gave one example, and that is, one can look around and see a home that is got all kinds of electrical equipment. The lights, the heating, the cooling system, the refrigeration, the freezing, the microwave, the radio, the telephone, the television. And if I were to say, you know what's the source of all this? The source of all this is the Niagara Falls. It's true, because the source of it all is electricity, whatever we've got. Electricity is used for it. And the electricity comes from Niagara Falls, it comes from water, there's a power there. And that power is converted, is harnessed, and that into energy, and then it is converted until it's used for the things that we need it to be used for. But that is the source of it. Now, it isn't an altogether true example, and it isn't an altogether good example. But I want to bring the matter to your attention in a way that you've got some idea of how these things work. And so everything in this world has got a source. But here it is quite different from what it is in its original source. An example that the Vilna Gaon gives when Yaakov hears the sons of Laban saying, everything that Yaakov has got belongs to our father. When he heard him saying that, Lokach Yaakov is called Asher Lovinu. Yaakov has taken everything that belongs to our father. And afterwards, Laban says, everything is mine. The sons, the daughters, the sheep, anything that you see around here, it all belongs to me. What he is saying to him is, Laban, you don't belong to my world. You are under quite a different influence and quite a different power. How do you come to have such possessions? How do you come to have substance and such wealth? This is Olam Hazeh. This is under quite a different influence. You've got it only because you were living in my country, and these were the influences there, and that is what you have. That is what he is, in essence, saying to him. Now, every country has got its own power. There is a power over that country. This power belongs to the spiritual world, but all those powers that there are in the spiritual world affect the physical world, affect the physical universe. And so, the Tsar of Esav, that is the power of Esav, and we shall deal with it in greater detail now. And the Tsar of Russia, that is a power that is there in Russia. And that influences the Russians. And if a Jew is there, it influences the Jew also, same as it influences the Russian. So that is the way it works. Now, let us deal a little bit further with what is going to be read in next week's Sefer, where Yaakov is left alone on one side of the river, and there struggles with him a man, an unknown man, and we are told that this is the Tsar Shel Esav. This is the power of Esav. The power of Esav wants to destroy Yaakov. That is how it is by the nature of things. It's not, we are not afraid of it, it's not altogether a bad thing, but we must be aware of it. The power of Esav seeks to destroy Yaakov because the two cannot be together. So wherever that power of Esav is, then it seeks to destroy the Jew. Where is the power of Aesop today? Rome is a descendant of Aesop. The Western world, that all belongs to Aesop. So it's true that in every part, in every country, it's got its own power, but there is a power that is overall a group of nations that go together. And so the group of nations that are descended directly from Edom and from Aesop has got one power that is over the power that each nation belonging to that group has got. We find that Haman, who was a first of all, we find Amalek. Amalek was a descendant of Esau, wants to kill the Jews. Haman, a descendant of Amalek and a descendant of Esau, wants to kill the Jews. Doesn't rest, he must kill the Jews. So we've got this power that is against us. Now I want to point out at this particular stage that we are not particularly afraid of this power, because we know that there will always be a people of Israel, we know that there will always be a land of Israel, and we know that there will always be a Torah. And it is necessary to have the very opposite for which the Am Yisrael stands. And the struggle against that evil brings out the good that is to be found in the Am Yisrael. Now, you might ask at this stage, so what is the power of the Bnei Yisrael? No power, the Hashem did not give the Bnei Yisrael over into any power. Hashem said, I look after the Bnei Yisrael. So there is no sign. There is no malach, there is no force, there is no power that is over the Bnei Yisrael. Excepting if the Jew wants it so and allows himself to be influenced by it, then it's there, there's no question about it. But if he is firm and he doesn't want it, then he is able to fight against it. So acclimatization does take place, but in quite a different way, in a very superficial way. The real thing about the Jew, the real Jew, is able to withstand all that. Now the next thing is, how does the Jew withstand it? The Jew is able to withstand it through the authenticity of the Torah. That is his only chance. Now we speak about the Dalit Amu Shel Halacha, that there are four L's of Halacha. And this the Jew takes with him wherever he goes. But allow me to explain it to you in slightly greater detail. The Jew is under the direct power of Hashem, unless he doesn't want it. He can choose for himself. He wants to be an American, he's under the power of Americans. And even American Jews take on very much of the Americans. I am busy trying to train people what chesed is. In America, they've got a system. You pay for everything you get. And you get paid for everything you do and for everything you give. That is the system. It's a very materialistic system. But it sometimes happens that a person does another a favor. Then, and this has been said to me by people who study Torah. Now he owes me one. Finished. No chesed. That's finished. Then that's no chesed. He owes me one. So it's prudence I've got him now. So the American Jew is influenced. Of course he is influenced, but he becomes, he's influenced by that same power that influences the American Goy. That same power influences the American Jew. I told you that also there is a power over the power, and that is Edom and Esau. There is a power, a Malach or a Tsar, that is over the whole group of those nations. America falls under that. America wants to destroy the Jew. How does he do it? Let him assimilate. Gives him every opportunity to assimilate. That is his way of dealing with it. In England, they've got a different way of dealing with it. In Russia, they have a different way of dealing with it. They forbade the study of the Torah, forbade the practice of the religion. That was enough. But it was to destroy the Jew. And that is the purpose of the Tsar shel Edom, and that is what happened with Yaakov when he struggled with a strange man. Now, the Dalet Amo shel Haloch. Four L's of Torah. The question is there any authenticity or isn't there any authenticity? Is everything relative, or are there things which are absolute? We've got to come to this conclusion. Now, we are living in a highly secular world. The difference between, one of the differences, the great differences between the secular world and our world is that the secular world brings everything down to the lowest possible level. Our world brings everything up to the highest possible level. So we've got all kinds of things. For example, we have got literature. So what does the world do, the secular world? It brings literature down to pornography. That's literature. Got to accept it. What do we want? We want to bring literature up to the highest, to that which is sacred. All our literature is sacred, except that literature is being written by Jews who are secularists. They don't want the type of Judaism that we follow. Now, the secularist brings everything down to the lowest possible level. If it is a question of marriage, husband and wife, man and woman living together, we raise it to the highest possible level. We bring a tremendous amount of kedushin into that, a tremendous amount of holiness. It starts off with kedushin, and kedushin is holy. We raise it immediately that an association with a man that has with a woman is holy. What does the secular world do with it? Brings it down. Just destroys it. A big pardon?
That's right.
Puts it... Now, it's in art. It's in music. I've asked artists, I said, why do you paint like this? It's such a mess. He says, that is the way I feel. It's a mess. I'm living in a mess. That is, I give expression to what I feel. He brings it down to what he feels. If you take music, present company excluded, one goes to a wedding. You know, I just can't take it. The noise that there is, the band, and it doesn't stop. But such a noise. And I go and ask the band leader, can't you make it quieter? And he says, no, that's what the people want. I say, what do you want? He says, this is it. This is, we give expression to what we feel. You go to a wedding in New York, no Dvar Torah, nothing at all. Now, is that the Jew or is that the Goy? This loud music, that it deafens one, is that a Jew or a Goy? So they play what they call Jewish music, and they call it Jewish music, and we've got to believe that this is Jewish music. Who says that that is Jewish music? We've never had anything like that. But this is the influence that there is. This is the acclimatization which takes place. We are influenced by that. There's no question about it. Can the Jew be different? Of course the Jew can be different. One rabbi came to me once. He spent a few days in our community. He came to me once and he said, the way you run your congregation, it's not Torah, it's English. He can't see any authenticity in it. To him, if it's not wild, then it's not Torah. To him, if it's orderly, it's not Torah. Rabbi Yisroel Salanter was known for his seder, how orderly he was. Rav Simcha Zisrael was known for how very orderly he was. Neither of them were German in any way. That is Torah authenticity, that there is a Seder. So there is authenticity. And the only authenticity that we have is in the Torah. And the purpose of the Torah is to take everything that there is here upon earth and to raise it as high as possible. If we can only bring...